I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the On The Box podcast, a television show podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel. And we are back after a long break. And you know what? You need a long break after doing Game of Thrones and covering all seven episodes weekly. We needed a bit of break, but that was an epic show. And to come back from a hiatus, you need an epic guest. And I've got with me today my longtime partner in crime. It's Mr. Dave Hendrick. How are you doing, Dave?
I am tremendous, guys.
Tremendous. And we're going to stay away from football for once, and we're going to talk television. I mean, that is God, weird.
Because that defending yesterday nearly gave me a fucking stroke.
It was heart attack football. We know this. No. Everyone knows it. It's Liverpool.
Yeah, it is literally cardiac arrest football. Like, that's it. Like,
it's horrible. But 3 points. And What we're covering today is a brand new show. Well, it was out a couple of months ago. I think July it was released on Netflix, called Ozark. We both really enjoyed this. So as usual, what we do on a non-Game of Thrones On The Box podcast is we go through a bit of a spoiler-friendly section. So if you guys never heard of this show and you're just listening to this because you love to hear Dave's voice, then make sure you listen to the next 5-10 minutes. And then if you want to watch it, because I'm telling you, this is a good show, come back and then listen to the rest, because there's no point spoiling it, because we are going to spoil everything after this section. So Dave, does this remind you of anything?
Yeah, it actually reminds me a bit of Breaking Bad because of the main character. Marty Bird is the type of geek that you don't ever expect to see doing anything outside the lines of the law. Yeah. Very much like Walter White.
Financial advisor, right? I mean,
Financial advisor, and even his appearance, like, he's a well-presented, but he's a small guy. He's not physically intimidating or anything like that. And he doesn't have, like, you know, if you met John Malkovich in the street, you'd think John Malkovich was carrying a knife or something, because his face looks like it's borne the brunt of decisions that he's made in his life. Whereas Jason Bateman's almost, he looks much younger than he actually is. He's almost a little bit baby-faced. So for me, it reminds me of Breaking Bad. And I, to be honest, in terms of the quality of the show, like, that's the kind of class I would put it into as well.
That's massive. Because Breaking Bad's historically, people obviously put
one of the best shows of all time.
Yeah, put it up there.
But I think this has the potential to get there, because you're looking at a show that's brilliantly written, brilliantly directed, and brilliantly acted. And with Bateman, again, it's such a far step from what you're used to seeing him in. Like, Jason Bateman, you always think of as, like, more of a comedic actor. You know, Arrested Development is what he's most famous for. Hancock, Horrible Bosses, Zootopia, stuff like that. Like, more family-friendly kind of comedic stuff. But this role is just, like it's a million miles from anything he's done before. And frankly, he absolutely nailed it. Like, he absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, and also he directed four of the episodes. He did. The first two and the last two. So if you're looking for something that's, you're a big fan of Jason Bateman, then this is totally different to what he does. Like, there's no comedy, by the way. This show is non-spoiler, obviously. It's intense, okay? It's dark. Yeah. It's not funny. There may be one or two lines, but honestly, there's nothing that makes you laugh your head off. Your stomach will churn at some points. It'll be kind of like tense. What the hell's happening next? It's one of those, and
it leaves you thinking as well.
It does, yeah. You can't be watching this and be on your phone.
No. Yeah, you've got to literally shut everything off.
Yeah.
This is one of those where you've just got to lock yourself into the show and focus on it. Because if you miss a small detail, it can throw you for up to two or three episodes. If you miss a small detail early on, you won't know what's happening later on. And like, they refer back constantly to things that have happened in the earlier episodes of the show. So it's just very, very well done. Like I say, it's brilliantly written. Like, it's so good. And every one of the actors in this show absolutely smashes their part.
Yeah, I agree. Before we do go to some stats, the guy who wrote it, I don't know if I say his name right, Bill Dubuque, whichever way, this guy actually has has a cabin for 25 years in the Ozarks. So that's why he actually ended up writing a show around that, because he found the Blue Lodge, something like that. Basically, there's a similar place there. They've obviously changed the name for rights, and you know, they don't ever want to put the same name in, but there's something there. Bill actually worked at it, exactly the same one. He actually worked there when he was younger. So there's a real sense to this as well. Like, as in, it's the Ozarks. The story's fictional, but the place is totally real. It's beautiful as well. So if you're looking for something that's really nice to look at as well, in terms of, locale is nice, isn't it? Like, the whole scenery. Exactly. It's just a beautiful place.
It's stunning.
It's stunning. Like,
it's absolutely stunning. And the writer as well, he's also the guy that wrote the film The Accountant, which came out last year, and it was really, really good. And he did The Judge back in 2014, and it was good as well. So, like, he's got a good pedigree.
He's quite young then, like, quite new then, isn't he? And he looks quite young.
Yeah,
he's only been
around 3-4 years. And, again, I think getting Bateman here is the key, because, like Gag said, he directs four episodes. He's obviously the main character, and he's one of the executive producers. So he's bought all into this. And this is a guy who's been on quite a rise for the last couple of years. So he's not going to throw his name to crap. And, like, to be honest, I think this is a massive win for Netflix, because obviously, you know, they had great success with House of Cards and a couple of others. But, like, if we're being honest, Netflix, some of the Netflix original stuff has been a little bit crap. House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and Narcos, they're obviously massive.
Stranger Things
is huge.
Nuts. Yeah.
The Crown was very good, but
those are the cream.
Yeah, and when you sit down and look at it, like, some of the Marvel stuff obviously has been good, some has been less good, but they've produced a lot of crap as well. But this was a real kind of statement that, you know, they're going to be upping their game, which they need to do. They really do need to do that if they're going to be investing so much money into original content. It's shows like this that's going to bring in all the extra viewers they want, and, you know, hopefully season two follows on from where season one left off in terms of the quality of the show. Because, like I say, I genuinely believe this show has the potential, when they finish their run, for people to look at it and say that is one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Wow, that's massive. And you know what? I'm going to put some of this in context. I've talked about demand expressions before, so the stats section as we normally do. This show, from 27th of August to 2nd of September, 14.75 million demand expressions for it. Now remember, demand expressions from Parrot Analytics are total audience demand being expressed for a title. So that audience demand reflects the desire, engagement, and consumption of content weighted by importance. So a stream or download is basically a higher expression of demand than, like, a like or a comment, for example. So in comparison, during that time, so between 27th August, 2nd September, just now in 2017, Stranger Things was at 12.8 million. Obviously, the trailer was out, so a lot of that will be social media. Narcos was at 12.3 million, new series was out. Defenders at 11.2, only, again, just came out. Disjointed just come out, 9.1 million. So, you know, I mean, and Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, 8.7 million. Now, compared to that, 14.75 million. That's pretty damn impressive. It tells you how it was number one in that week. So this is out. This was out in July, folks. Right? So in August and September, it's doing that. Now, an interesting comparison of the shows when they were actually released. Narcos released early September. So the whole time of so far in September, 27.2 million demand expressions. That just tells you how big that is for Netflix. Okay. Ozark in July, 15.2 million, not bad. Stranger Things, 10.9 in July 2016. Defenders, 8.9 million, August 2017. So like Dave says, some of the Marvel stuff is a bit, it's not as big as some of the, like people think it's big, but it's not as big as some of their A game, their class stuff. 13 Reasons Why, 7.3 million in March. I mean, that grew with word of mouth though later on because of the topics and stuff, but just compare for a second. Ozark, 15.2 million in July, and Narcos. I mean, I've got to cover Narcos, so we will do that in the future, but another brilliant show. But Ozark, it didn't really get, Dave, that much publicity, like, as in, it was, you know, before it came out. I don't think it was massively hyped. They didn't spend much money on it.
No, they didn't.
And for the numbers it's producing, it's fantastic.
Yeah. You know? And I think, like, as you mentioned Stranger Things and 13 Reasons Why, and obviously The Crown as well, like those three all came out since last summer, 2016.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that what they've done is they're fine tuning how they promote and how they release things. Because if you look back at some of the older stuff that when they would release, like they'd be hyping it and hyping it and hyping it for weeks and months on end. And it'd be terrible. Like muck. But they've sort of found like their perfect formula, and I think they nailed it on this. And I think this is the type of show that if you sell it in a, cause it's a, like, it's not a show where like it kind of blows your mind in the first episode or the second episode.
It does grip
episode.
You though.
That's what it does. It grips you and it draws you in.
Yep. Definitely.
It's not like, you can think of some shows over the years where, like, the very first episode just blows your mind. And then after that, it kind of all falls away. Whereas with this, it grips you and it just, it's almost like opera music. It builds and builds and builds builds.
All the way to the last episode, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so perfect that they didn't overhype it. They didn't oversaturate the market with promotion for it. Very subtle ads. And as the show progressed, they started to amp up the promotion because of the how handy Netflix is for everybody, where they release the whole thing at once. You can just binge watch it at any point. You can just jump in and catch up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Because of the style of service. So if you decide to jump in and for week 8, you can just sit back and watch weeks 1 to 7 before you catch up for episode 8, you know, or if you flick it on in the middle of episode 8 one day because you're bored, flick it on for episode 8 one day because you're bored or whatever. If you're an idiot, like, you know, or if you're in a friend's house and they're watching it and you see it and you think, geez, this is quite good, you can just go home, get Netflix and just literally binge watch the whole thing in one day.
Exactly. When olden days, when you're on TV and you're watching it and you watch an episode and you think, oh, that's good. How do I find it? It was so difficult to go and get like some shows that are on TV, even on demand, like for example, on Sky, they expire. You can't actually go back and get, for example, I wanted to watch season 3 of Ballers. This is the example I'll give you, Dave. There's only episodes 6 to 10 on Sky. For Ballers, and I'm like,
It's because of the way Sky purchased licensing.
Yeah, it's shit.
So, what will happen is in about 6 months or so, they'll put the whole thing up and they'll leave it up for a period of probably about, it's either 6 or 12 months. But for now, like, they purchase individual episodes for certain
Yeah, for a month, I think.
Yeah.
They all get it for a month. So that's why, towards the end of the season, you only get the end of the season. And I was like, well, I wait till the end of the season because I want to binge. I don't do the weekly stuff anymore. Apart from Game of Thrones, that's the only show, because it's worth it. And also the spoilers, you just cannot get through.
For me, like, I've got a couple of shows that I watch every week, but they're the procedural shows where, like, not a whole lot happens. Things like Chicago Fire. Law and Order and stuff. Like, I like to watch them, but they're just because they are very easy watching. You know, there's no real heavy story. No. Well, SVU is heavy every week, but because the subject matter, but it's an easy one to watch, and you can miss an episode and then jump back in and you haven't missed anything because there's no long running story arcs. Whereas with shows like this, if you miss one episode, you're completely screwed because you won't know what's happening. I actually think this, as great as it is in the Netflix formula, this might have, if this had been on regular television, if this had been an NBC or a Fox show going week to week, I actually think this would be getting 10 times more hype than it gets because of the way Netflix do it. Purely on the basis of the build-up week to week, like with Breaking Bad over the years, just would have been that much more. But because of Netflix, you don't have to wait for next week. It does kind of take away a lot of the midweek chatter.
You're right.
You know what I mean? If you remember when like things like Breaking Bad was on, and like GOT is the big one, like when it's on, over the weekend or like say late in the week, you just see so many people talking about the previous episode, speculating towards the next episode. And unfortunately for this would be the perfect show for something like that. But because of the Netflix thing, you don't have to wait for that episode. Like, as great as Netflix is, that's just the one area for me where it does sort of, it loses a little bit of the potential it has for the show to get, like, I'm talking like mega hype.
Yeah.
Like House of Cards, I always thought was the same. And the biggest problem I've had with Netflix over the years in terms of the way they do this is that there's times during certain shows, and House of Cards was one that I actually stopped watching for about a year before I went back to it, where they start to go in the wrong direction. And in a normal show, if a show starts to go in the wrong direction and they see online chatter about it going in the wrong direction and fans turning off and they're getting their ratings, they can see their ratings dropping off, they can change it. You know, they can just change things. They can change direction. They can bring it back this way.
They can reshoot. Yeah.
Reshoot some scenes and rework the episode. Unfortunately with this, they're locked in and committed. And that was always my big weakness for House of Cards, is that they're locked in and committed. So whatever they've decided before episode one is what's going to happen in episode 13.
Yeah, it's been a problem though for a long time. I think when Cy Brundish was on this pod and kicked it off with Neil Devlin back in the day, I think one of the first things he said on the first pod was Sky Atlantic have ruined or television, or what they do is there's a load of shit shows out there that have got three seasons from the get go because Sky have pumped so much money into something.
Yeah.
And even if the writing's shit, that thing is there for 3 years no matter what. And it's ruined it because a lot of other, for example, Netflix, Amazon, all these things having to go that way just because otherwise they're not going to get any good shows. People are looking for guarantees, you know? And that's one of the problems.
Comedy shows have had the worst of it in that they've changed the format in which they now do comedy, like half-hour comedy shows. Like, I don't know if you remember, is it Anger Management? Is that the name of the show that Charlie Sheen did after?
There was one. I didn't see it, but yeah, I've heard of it.
So the way they did it was a 10-episode run. And if that 10 episodes was well received, they renewed it for a second season of 95 episodes.
Holy shit.
Now, that show was fucking awful. I mean awful. Yet it got 105 episodes.
What the fuck?
But it was because it's cheap. It was cheaper for them to just shoot it that way than to try and shoot, say, four seasons of 25 each or whatever. I'm just going to make sure. I'm fairly certain I'm right on that's what the format became. They actually did 100 episodes, so they did 10 and 90 over two series of that anger management. And it, like, I mean to say, it was absolutely horrendous. Absolutely horrendous.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're saying is TV's, it's weird, has loads of deals.
It's very difficult. Because there's so much money that goes into these shows now, because a lot of it is, like, you get guys like Jason Bateman, who is a successful film star. He's coming across the television because that's what a lot of them are starting to do, because the money's really good. They can shoot an entire TV series in the time it takes to shoot one movie and get paid more for it. And it gives them an opportunity to really, like, play different characters. Like again, with this, with Bateman, like, this is a complete departure from anything he's played before.
Yeah, and let's move into the show. Just before we do, this is the end now of the spoiler-free section, guys. So if you want to switch off here, best to go. One last thing that I want to say in terms of a show that's kind of that I thought was similar, something like Sneaky Pete. It's the tense part of it, someone living a lie or hiding stuff, loads of that stuff going on in Ozark as well. So yeah. Sneaky Pete was similar. So go and watch it, because I loved Sneaky Pete as well. So go and check that out. If you have seen it, then you should be watching this as well. So that is the end of that section. So if you're going to do that, switch off now. We are now going into spoiler central. So Dave, you were talking about Jason Bateman. Let's kick off with his character, because he is the root of everything in this show. Marty Bird, a financial advisor in Chicago. And what is he doing, mate?
He is laundering big bags of cash for Mexican drug cartel.
With his mate Bruce.
With his mate Bruce. Poor Bruce.
Oh my God. Doesn't last long.
It's yeah, and the thing is, like, you kind of feel like there was potential for the Bruce character to really, like, if they had Bruce do a runner and, you know, he just comes back intermittently to be a complete pain in Marty's arse while he's trying to cover what, you know, the mistakes Bruce made. You kind of feel like there was good potential there.
Totally agree. He was a really good character, actually. One episode, but he's good.
Josh Randall, who played him, is a really good actor as well, and has a kind of, you know, the way everybody has a childhood friend who's a little bit thick, does things without really thinking, and kind of gets everybody in trouble.
Yes.
And we all have one of those friends, and he has the face of that friend. He's the guy you grew up with that you love to bits, but he's a fucking pain in your arse because he's always dragging you into absolute nonsense.
I mean, we don't want to spend too much time on Bruce, but don't you think he was a bit smart as well? Like, he walked in and pretty much sold, you know, he sold the services.
He was smart, a salesman.
Yeah.
He was a salesman. Marty is the genius kind of money guy, business guy. Bruce was the salesman. And it was a really good partnership, because Marty was quite a quiet, introverted kind of person. He's fairly softly spoken, whereas Bruce was loud and boisterous and whatever else. It's kind of like you're Marty and I'm Bruce, really, isn't it? You're like the nice, honest.
I wouldn't call you thick, mate. Let's put it that way. I wouldn't call you thick, though.
And I'm like the one that just shouts and causes trouble and. I'll probably cause more aggro for you than anyone else.
Do you know what the funniest thing is about Bruce? He wants to move big. He wants to got big cars. He wants to drive.
Yeah.
And Marty's keeping himself low down, right?
Yeah.
But you could tell how smart Marty is immediately when they go to this new office. And he's like, but it's facing the ocean. And it means that the you know, and it starts coming out with these stats about how it's going to cost him more. Like, it's like, what the fuck? How do you know this shit? He's just... immediately, within minutes of the show starting, you know, Marty Bird is one switched on bird. You know, he knows what he's doing. And Del says the same thing, doesn't he? Like, as soon as Del is the drug cartel man. He's not the head. He's just like one of the fucking, he's probably the head of that area, maybe Chicago. That's it.
He's like a district manager.
There you go. District manager. You know better than me about drug cartels, obviously. But he turns up.
I knew a guy once.
No, let's not go there, Dave. We don't know who's listening. But basically, imagine he just, I mean, I think we can skip all. I mean, there's one little, obviously, major, major twist in this is that Marty's caught looking at porn, and you think he's just you think he's just watching porn, but it turns out that he's watching his fucking wife have an affair.
Wife getting, that's exactly it. And because you see him watching it, what, 4 or 5 different times before it actually...
like, yeah, apparent.
You kind of have a little suspicion that maybe it's her, but because of the angle of the way it's shot, you're like, well, is it him and her? Is he... Because you see, as the show goes on, obviously, you see the cracks in the relationship, and then you get the backstory of why the relationship is kind of falling apart. And then when they move down to the Ozarks, obviously
they've got to work together.
They have a conversation where they're no longer going to be husband and wife. They're more like business partners.
That's right.
So you kind of, as you see him watch it, you're kind of like, is he trying to remind himself of when they were happy and, you know, had a healthy relationship? And then obviously it becomes more clear of who it is. It's not him.
So that's one problem.
It's
in
Superman.
His life. Yeah. So there's we'll get to that in a second, why Dave called him Superman. But so that's one problem in his life. The second problem, Dave, happens when Del turns up and accuses him of stealing money. But the brilliant thing here is he doesn't actually think they have. He's just there on a hunch, as in not even a hunch. He's just testing him. And Marty catches him immediately, doesn't he? This is a ruse. Like, he catches him straight away. This is a ruse. And he goes, oh, that's a clever word. But then, fucking, what I love about Del is ruthless. Absolutely fucking ruthless. Like, that is what you want a villain to be. You want to fear this guy. You want the protagonist, you want the main guy, like Marty Bird, to fucking fear him. And he shoots Bruce's bird. That Marty Bird, I have to keep using Bird now, right? Because of Marty Bird. But he shoots Bruce's love of his life, pretty much.
Yeah.
Del
is the guy that we as Liverpool fans want a centre back and a holding midfield. Just a horrible, gnarly bastard.
Yes, or a midfielder.
No remorse, doesn't give a shit, it's all business. And like he's not afraid to kill someone based on, well, this might lead me to something. I have a suspicion of something. I'm going to shoot now, and I'm going to ask questions later. As you said, like he was just there on a hunch. He wasn't there because he had concrete evidence that they'd been stealing. He just had a bit of a gut feeling that they'd been stealing from him. It showed the intelligence of Marty, because when Bruce was telling Marty about the Ozarks and handed him the flyer, you kind of felt like Marty's not really listening to this idiot. He doesn't care. He just takes the flyer to make him shut up and go away.
Yeah.
But when Del puts the gun to his head,
great scene.
It's brilliantly done. That whole, what is it, about 5-6 minutes from the beginning of, like, when Marty's sitting in the car having a weird fantasy.
Yeah, how weird is that? He has so many dreams, like daydreams or dreams at night. That's a big story arc. Yeah, go on.
And from there up until, you know, the end of that whole kind of succession of scenes, when Marty finally convinces Del to give him the chance to go to the Ozark, That's just brilliantly done. But when he starts talking to Del and trying to convince him that, like, I can make this work, he's thinking on his feet. He uses the one thing that Bruce told him that he actually listened to, that the Ozarks has more coastline or more
shoreline
than the state of California. And he uses that one line to pitch the idea of going there to wash money, which saves his life, saves his family's life, and gets him a second chance. And from there, like, the show just takes off. You really get the feel for who Marty actually is.
I know. It's mad, because his wife then, he goes home, he says he hasn't told his wife anything. She knows, obviously, what he's doing. But he goes home, tells her that we are in big shits, and she's having this affair. So she runs straight to this guy, this rich guy living on a high story in an apartment, absolute plush place. And he advises her to take all the money out, whatever money she's got. And so Marty's not stupid. He's got alerts on everything. So he gets an alert that his wife's taken all this money out. He's heading over to this guy's apartment. And Dave, this is gold.
This is one of the greatest deaths in TV history.
So true.
As Marty walks from his car to the building, he's probably parked about 100, 150 meters away. He's walking across, and as he's walking, you can see him trying to build himself up for what's going to be a confrontation, not just with his wife, but with her lover as well. And then all of a sudden there's a big splat, and the guy lands in the middle of the road, having been fucked from the roof, which is probably
unbelievable.
Chicago Financial District. It's probably 60 to 70 floors.
Yeah, it's a proper splat. His shoe goes flying. It is like, what the hell? It is, honestly, when you're watching it, you go, what?
Yeah.
You actually do just look at the screen and go, holy shit. And then obviously Del calls him, and it's such a beautiful way. You know, I mean, he ends up saving her, right? He saves her life. And Del's not stupid. Del knows that she knows everything, but he does say, wow, you haven't confronted her yet.
Yeah.
So.
It goes to show, again, it's developing the character of Marty Bird. Showing that, look, he is a money launderer for Mexican drug cartel, but even though his wife is cheating on him, he saves her life. So, like, deep down, he is a good, good guy. Like, his first reaction is to save the life of her. And the reason he does it is because, you know, first of all, he still loves her, but she's the mother of his children. So that's, you know, you begin to see how important his kids are to him. Again, Gags, that's at the end of a great kind of succession of scenes where he's actually withdrawing his money and going into banks and arguing with bank managers about financial regulations. And, you know, it's just so well done. And it's so cleverly shot as well.
Yeah,
because of the way it's kind of choppy.
It's just mad how he just goes in and says, so you wouldn't, you know, the FBI guys have got like notes written down and the cards, the cue cards. And they're like, he goes, no, I'm not under duress. No, I'm not. No one's been kidnapped. Just give me my fucking money.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant.
But again, like as we said earlier on, there's no kind of real laugh out loud comedy moments, but that is something that'll give you a bit of a chuckle.
Yes, because he's acting so good, isn't it? And he's got that funny.
Exactly, like,
you know him to be a funny guy, and the way he brings across that is funny. Mm-hmm. But remember, it's an anti-hero show. Marty is not a hero. You do want him to succeed in what he's doing, but he's fucking a money launderer. He's a money launderer. He's involved with the drug cartel. He's not doing anything good. There's no good. There's all grey. This show is fucking pure grey. Pure grey. There is no good in this show, I don't think. It's grey or dark. It's just so dark. So, I mean, moving... we could talk about Marty, Dave. I mean, we're already half an hour into the show here, right? We could talk about this guy the whole way, but I'm sure it'll merge in with... I think his wife, she's such a brilliant character.
Yeah.
And actress. Brilliant. As well. I mean, she's so good.
She's one of the best female secondary characters, and she's not really a secondary character, she's one of the main characters, but she's secondary to Jason Bateman. But
yeah, they all are.
She's just so good in this role. It just suits her to a T.
She's so sassy.
She's very, like, she looks like someone who's a mom. The way she plays the role, you know, and as the character develops and you see her going out, getting her own job, finding that little bit of independence, which is something that was obviously lacking in her life back in Chicago because she was a stay-at-home housewife and mother. But just the way she plays it, she's very quick turn of phrase, very sarcastic.
No nonsense at times.
Not
as well.
To be pushed around.
I mean, yeah, no nonsense. Remember the estate agent when she walks in?
Yeah.
Get your shit together and meet me outside. I'm like, what the fuck?
Exactly. This guy is sitting, you know, enjoying his day. Ugh. The big freak having his dog lick peanut butter off his toes.
Yeah.
Like some sort of weirdo. Here's the thing for me, guys. The FBI are investigating the wrong man. They shouldn't be chasing Marty Bird. Let that man launder his money. Go and find the freaks that are getting peanut butter licked off their toes by dogs. That's who the FBI should be chasing. Leave illegal activities alone and focus on weirdos.
Whilst we're on the estate agent, the way his mother dies, because we're not going to spend too much time on it, the way his mother dies is also really like, what the fuck moment?
Yeah, it's another one of the great TV deaths. Like, it's so...
She's such an annoying bitch.
It's really... In a different show, that is a moment where everybody laughs hysterically. But because of the tense nature of this show, it's kind of like, oh, shit. It kind of throws you back in the seat a little bit. It's another brilliant death. It really, really is.
Oh, God. I mean, that was just a piece of the puzzle for Wendy getting another business to launch. She was just trying to... What the show becomes is, how do we launder money in the Ozarks, pretty much, right? So that's what they're doing. So lots of characters get introduced into the show. So, I mean, we just talked about Wendy, how she's no-nonsense. There's another one immediately that comes into the show, and her name is Ruth Langmore. Now, the Langmores are massive in this show. So yeah. Ruth, and I think going forward into season two, there's going to be another Langmore, I reckon, maybe comes out of jail or whatever, who's going to probably become like another threat.
I think the two big characters to come in season two are going to be Cade Langmore, who's Ruth's father.
Yeah.
He's in prison in season one. And although he does develop in season one, I think Jacob Snell is going to be huge in season two.
Yep, we'll talk about the Snells in a second.
But it all starts with Ruth.
Yes.
It all starts with
Ruth. She's so good, dude.
Like, that. Julia Garner plays her. I hadn't seen her in anything before, but she's an incredible actress. And
incredible.
That character is just so, so good because you can see, it's the balance of good versus evil, because you can see, like, there is goodness in her. She would desperately like not to be a criminal redneck from buttfuck Missouri.
Yep.
She would like to have a nice, simple life, and she takes care of her cousins, and she tries to, you know, be the woman of the caravans, I suppose.
Right? I think that she sees her a lot. You're not your dad. And she's like, well, you lot are all fucking sick.
Yeah, she's trying to, like, she is trying to take care of them all. She's got her two uncles, one of whom is thick as pig shit, like.
He is.
And her two cousins. And she's trying to look after them. And she's trying to make the best for the family. But there is this bit about her that's just, you're like, that is one dangerous, dangerous woman. You would not want to be caught cheating on her, because she would cut you into pieces with small knives.
Yeah, one plot hole, Dave. Agree with me. Do you agree with me, should I ask? I think they say she's like 19 in the show, but she's working in she takes over, you know, because obviously Marty, in the end, takes over the titty bar, as they say. But we'll talk about that in a sec. But isn't that... She's not even legally allowed to be in there?
She's not, but I think that goes to show sort of the lawlessness of the area.
Right,
where
gotcha.
Where they are sort of, like, the cop does kind of turn a blind eye to a lot of stuff that goes on. And obviously the guy that Marty takes that establishment from has been using it to launder money and for criminal purposes. So I think it is just to kind of to show, like, that there is a lawless nature to this place. But I do agree, like, if she'd been maybe portrayed as 2 years older, I think the character would have worked even better. But she's a young actress. She's 22, 23, I think. I remember looking it up when I first saw it, because I'd never heard of her before. But she's just brilliant. Like, it's such a brilliant character.
And that might as well talk about it now. One of her major arcs in this is, firstly, she nicks the money. She steals the money, and Jason gets himself, Marty Bird, sorry, gets himself outside of a pickle, again, very cleverly. But she's like, you know, I'm on to you. So she kind of finds a job. She gets her way into getting a job with him. But he, again, is really clever for her, implicates her.
Yeah.
And then
in what he's doing.
Exactly, so brilliant. But then he actually works together with her to con the guy who owns the strip club, which was so clever, Dave, I thought.
It was brilliantly done. Absolutely brilliantly done. And, you know, you could kind of, when she went in to audition for her job in the strip club, like, it was kind of, you could see how kind of awkward she was.
Yeah,
like,
so awkward.
It kind of developed her as a character as well, because you could see she has that almost shy, awkward nature, and it kind of represented her in her role in the family. She doesn't want to be like the head of the house. She wants to just have a normal life. She wants to just be a kid and do what 19-year-old girls do. And it's the same when she's in there auditioning for the job. You can tell she doesn't want to be there, but she's trying to portray something for this pervert owner. And she's clearly uncomfortable with it, but she does it. And, yeah, like you say, she takes over the strip club. Once she helps Jason Bateman take over, she punches one of the strippers in the face, because she won't accept disrespect, which, cause you look at it and you go like, you know, it's a little silly that the show has a 19-year-old running a business. Isn't that a little bit silly? But she shows that she's no nonsense. She shows that there's a bit more maturity about her, because her first two jobs in the show, if you remember, are she's a cleaner in a motel.
Yep.
And she is a dishwasher in the
New Cat Lodge.
New Cat Lodge. And then all of a sudden she jumps to being the manager of a strip club. But
because her end game is money. She just wants cash. You know?
And that's the thing. And Bateman, you can, like, they never specifically say it, but Bateman clearly figures that out, because she says to him, "You cost me my job," even though, like, she cost herself her job by stealing. "You cost me my job, so you have to give me a job now." So he gives her a job as a dish cleaner in the Blue Cat Lodge. But you can see that he sees the potential in her. He knows what she's really in it for. It's not just to have an honest 9-to-5. She just doesn't want to work, and she wants money. But the scene for me, Gags, that I really enjoyed was the scene in the bathroom where Bateman discovers the whole Langmore family with the money.
Yeah.
Because when he starts talking about Dell, about the cartel, all that, all the rest of them shit themselves.
Yeah, they start walking out slowly.
Except
brilliant.
Her. She doesn't give a fuck. No. She has no fucks left to give.
Mm.
She just looks at him and, like, has nothing but disdain for him. And she's like, I'm not... Basically, like, obviously, we're going to find out more about her dad as the seasons go forward.
Seems like a gangster, doesn't he?
But, yeah, it's almost like maybe he has some serious connections as well that we're going to find out about. Now, maybe his connections are going to be Jacob Snell or something. We don't know, but, you know, Jacob Snell seems like a dangerous man himself.
We're going to go straight to the Snells next world. Year.
But she has obviously no fear of what Bateman is saying, which kind of gives you an insight into her mindset and maybe how she's been brought up. So, like, there's an awful lot more to come from her, I think, in season two. But, I mean, the big thing with her that we saw as, you know, because she was planning to kill Bateman. She was planning to do that.
Yeah, the amazing scene, right? We finish this off with Ruth. She wants to kill him. She wants to electrocute him. And I think it's the FBI agent
agent, Roy Petty.
We'll go to Roy Petty after the Snells. I wasn't sure about him, to be honest, in this show, but we'll go there in a minute. But she obviously blames her family for it and all that. But then she actually kills someone during it. Didn't she kill?
She kills her uncles.
She kills her uncle. Oh, my God, in the end, yes, that's it.
She kills her uncles, yeah.
Crazy, crazy turnaround.
They are going in to kill him. So she rigs the dock.
She electrifies
the ladder.
Mm.
By basically putting a current into the water, sends a charge up the metal ladder on the dock, and as soon as
they touch it, they're done,
and it's just brilliantly
done. Because one uncle's a bit thick, he touches the other one and he gets shocked.
he grabs the ladder and then turns and grabs the other guy, and they're both like, and I mean barbecue.
Oh, that is amazing. I mean, talking about one of the uncles, you get a bit of a twist with him because you don't know that, you know, he's gay in there. You don't realize it, and obviously he has a relationship with FBI agent Roy Petty, who. I mean, I liked Russ as a character. I thought he was a good character. It was the way he developed in the show. I thought it was excellent. And his demise was sad because he was just so desperate in the end to get away from... Because obviously, the FBI is playing games with all of them. So, Roy Petty, I don't know, man. I was...
No, he's a little bit... He's the only one that's OTT. A little bit of an awkward fit, isn't he?
OTT, man. I thought he was over the top.
Yeah.
Could have been casted better, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a little bit extreme. Like the whole, like there's a very graphic. No, it's not graphic because you can't see anything. Mm. But there's a very aggressive, shall we say?
Yeah, he is. He's crazy.
Scene where another man has given him head, and he's basically just like forcing it. Like, and it's a little bit. It's an insight into who he is as a person. Like,
and that's fine.
He's a highly, highly strong. Very high stressed, like, doesn't take failure well at all.
Like I said about the Greys, he's not a good guy. Not because of that, but because of the way he's going about things in terms of he will bend any rule to get these guys.
That's exactly it. But that's just, like, I'm interested to see where they take that character in season two.
Yeah.
Because he was the one kind of awkward fit into it in that, but then the show does need a real bastard. Like, you can't,
he's
like, Del is a bastard, but Del is, there's something
elegance about him, wasn't there?
And there's a real sense of, like, you know, comfort with who he is and what he's doing. He's an upfront bastard.
He was the guy, you know, the guy from Breaking Bad, he was the first boss that they had.
Yeah,
what's his name? Great actor. You know, he's the one who's head of the drugs and makes the factory for them. I forget his name, but he's that equivalent, I thought.
Yeah.
Really elegant. But, like,
you know, he's not trying to be anything other than what he is, which is, you know, a fast-living gangster-like.
Yeah.
Marty has things that you like about him, even though you know he's a criminal. But this guy's, like, the one real bastard in the show that doesn't seem at the moment to have any real redeemable or likable characteristics to him.
No, nothing. They try to with his mum, but it still doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
No.
And it kind of shows that his way of dealing with anything is violence. So he has, if, you know, his mother's, you know, got a drug problem, he reacts with violence. He's having a bad time trying to catch Marty, so he reacts with violence in different ways. And it is just, I don't know, like, I'm really interested to see how they develop that character in season two.
Mm.
I think there is definite scope for him to become a very good character. But he could go either way. I mean, this is a guy who really is, like, in his mind, he is doing everything for the greater good, which is bringing down criminals. And he's obviously very ambitious because you hear him before he goes to the Ozarks, and he's back in his FBI office. He says the line, you know, like, if I catch him, my career is made.
And he gets a transfer.
Yeah.
Just for this.
Just chase Marty Bird.
Crazy.
Which is kind of weird, like, because obviously the FBI are all over America, so there are FBI agents in Missouri, and the fact that he doesn't check in with them is kind of sets the tone for who he is. This unethical. Real loner, unethical, kind of trying to play by his own little rule book, not doing what you know he should be doing, you know, in terms of how professionally should be going about this. But it is interesting. I mean, the relationship between him and Russ, I really like that dynamic. I thought it was really good. And obviously he brings Russ out of, you know, out of the closet or whatever. And
yeah. I thought it was great. I thought that was the best bit, and I thought that was the greatest bit about Russ as well, that he found himself, and then he's hiding it from his family because he's so... It's for that because age guy...
He's a red. Because yes, he's a redneck.
Exactly.
Fuck Missouri.
So and hard.
It was a gay great, down there isn't allowed.
Psychology-wise, great yeah. to show on... And you know what? He acted it well. Russ was brilliant. It was a
you
shame.
You know what might be with petty gags that kind of makes it a little bit awkward is that... The show has like so much psychology about it, and it's constantly making you think. But he's the most like psychological character because he's kind of like pathological in the way he does things, and maybe it's just a little bit too much. Like you know, if you're making a chili and you put one spoon too much chili powder,
yeah,
maybe, and it kind of ruins the whole thing. Like it's edible, but it's. Like he doesn't ruin the show in any way, shape, or form, but just maybe he's that little tweak too much.
He's an example of what you said earlier, where if this was a weekly show, he could have toned it down. But because it's done in one big go, Petty, as a FBI agent Petty, if it was weekly, he could have toned it down a bit because he would have got reviews. But because it's done in one big go, maybe in the second season, he's toned down a little because he's read some reviews and says, you know what? I'm not saying he listens to this pod. I'm just saying there's going to be others that think like us. It can't be just us that thinks this. And that he'll just tone it down a little bit, which will probably make him a better character and the show a little bit better too.
Agreed. And I think it opens far more avenues for him as well. Because I do think there's great potential for the character. As with certain others, like I said, with Ruth.
Oh, right, Ruth.
Ruth, there's more potential so for
much.
Ruth.
Yeah, she could do so much.
And
she's
becoming
the goodie for me. She's becoming the good person. Yeah, it's amazing.
And I think, but there's real potential for Ruth, for Rachel, who's the owner of the Blue Cat.
Should we talk Rachel now first before we go to the Snells? Because the Snells need to be the last people. Let's do Rachel. I liked Rachel. I thought she was really good.
I thought Marty was going to be banging her.
There's
a real sexual chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah,
and she's clearly. Had a little bit of a tough life,
and she's not having a good time at the business. He turns it around really well.
And
that was so smart with the gas pricing and the burgers. Yeah. Oh,
but again, that just shows how quickly he can tap into a business that he's definitely never worked in before, and understand what it's going to take to turn around and get customers in the door. Like she's obviously had a tough life. Business has gone. Downhill, he arrives, then all of a sudden she kind of discovers, like she figures out what's going on because she gets the invoices and figures out that he's lost.
Again, he would hide them surely in a better, I mean, the writing's great, but I suppose they need her to find out somehow. But
The thing for me is I look at that as if like he's gotten a little bit comfortable.
Ah,
because she's sort of gone to him, well, you take care of all the business side of things and I'll just run the bar. So he's gotten a little bit careless. And there's a couple of little moments through the series where he does get a little bit careless with things, like where he leaves the money, you know, where he leaves it in that lockup. And Ruth finds out that it's there. And you're like, Marty, that's careless.
And then the lodge in the room.
Yeah.
It's careless.
Exactly. You know?
You're right. I totally agree. I think that's a really great way of summing the carelessness because Ruth finds out, other people find out, and obviously it's stolen. It goes into this. In the end, Rachel, this person that we want him to hook up with, steals the money. And she leaves her own fucking lodge.
Yeah.
Her business. She's gone. I mean, that is brilliant. It's brilliant. But there wasn't much more. To her, although she is part of the uncle's dying and all that, and she becomes embroiled in all of that, doesn't she, in the end?
Mm.
But they haven't...
She does, because she finds the money.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're kind of wondering, oh, like, this is going to be a good confrontation. And then it doesn't happen because of the thing with the uncles. But it's going to be really, really interesting to see where they go with her next season.
He's going to find her. He is going to find her somehow.
Of course he is.
And it's going to be great to how he brings her back because he would have had her as part of it. And, you know, obviously she's got the money. So, either that or the cartel finds her. either way, she's going to have to come back and he's going to have to save her life in season two, which is a nice little thing that that happened. But let's move on, because we have a couple of, I think a pair of characters that we need to talk about. But let's go with the Snells, because this ties in to the, I forget his name, you know, this character, the other guy, the holy man. How do I say it? What's his, what would you put it as? The pastor.
The pastor, yeah.
Yes. So the Snells relate to this because...
Mason Young.
Yes.
That's the most American name there has ever been. Mason Young.
Yeah, and he's had a near-death experience, which converts him into thinking he is... You know, obviously he's then goes religious and starts preaching, which is fine, which is fair enough. Good backstory for him. But what he doesn't know is that when he preaches, and it's an amazing thing that he does, he preaches on the water, you know, with it's such a great thing. I actually loved that about what he's doing. But what he doesn't know is that what he's doing, because he's got no church, is being used to distribute drugs locally, which is unbelievable. I thought it was so good. He actually thinks he's got an audience, but really, they're all there for drugs.
That's it. But I mean, again, it's a really, like, you wouldn't, if
what a
if
great you were piece going, of writing, Dave. Just
if
what
you're going to become a drug dealer tomorrow,
yeah,
you wouldn't think of doing that.
but there's no other way.
It's just very creatively done.
Really good.
It fits in where they are in terms of like all the water that's down there. The Mason Young character is very, very good. And like, again, one that we're going to see more of.
He's going to take a dark turn, I think, now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I'll tell you one thing, guys. The most tense moment of this entire season is when he walks into the water with the baby.
Mate, I did not want to watch, honestly.
No.
I was like, you can't do this on TV. Please do not do this on TV. And I had a suspicion. Is he baptizing him? Please be baptizing him, you know?
Yeah.
I had a suspicion, but
then he holds him in the water for...
Oh my, too long.
Like, it seems like about 5 minutes.
It does, because as funny. The viewer, you're shitting
it's
yourself.
So tense. And the thing for me is I was like, if this was on normal, as he's doing it, I'm like, if this was on normal TV, he'd definitely pull him out. But this is Netflix. Maybe there's different rules because you have to subscribe to Netflix.
But
this is on normal TV.
There's different rules. Like when, I mean, we haven't even talked about his kids yet, Marty's. You think she's going to die when she's drowning in the water?
Yeah.
And that's one of the Netflix beauties of Netflix is, and the rule is like,
they can do different things.
They can do what they want. And you know, they can kill anyone off whenever they want. It's their, you know, and we'll get back to his kids because them two are weird as well. But, Mason.
His daughter might be the most annoying person in the history of the world.
I totally agree with you. And
she's
let's
definitely
cover
top three. She's top three.
Yeah, let's cover them in a minute. But Mason, though, what happens to him? You know, Marty is embroiled with these in a three-way in terms of, obviously, he wants the church. If the church comes, they can't. The Snells can't do their drugs. So loads of things happen. And to cut a story short, Mason is very, very stubborn. Very stubborn. And in the end... they threatened the Snells. There's Darlene Snell is crazy in this show.
She's psychotic. She is psychotic.
Absolutely crazy. And she cuts the kid out of her. Now, thankfully, they don't show it, Dave, because...
That's the thing, guys. They don't show it. And it leaves a little bit of wiggle room, I suppose.
Of course, because she might be alive.
Exactly. Mm. You know, it does leave them open to a couple of different angles for next year. But I mean, when she stabs Bobby Dean in the neck with the needle, having given him the lemonade.
Wow.
And then like basically ODs him with heroin. Yeah. And then like pretty much every time anyone else comes to the house,
she's ready.
She's looking to give them the lemonade. If you get invited, as I'm telling you this, you're all my friends that listen to this.
Don't go
if
to the Snells.
If you get invited to the Snells house, don't drink the lemonade.
Lemonade. No. And okay, they are both really good characters, though, isn't they? Aren't
yeah.
they? I mean,
oh, they're brilliant.
Jacob Snell is Peter Mullen, is it? And he's really highly renowned.
Yeah, he's a great actor. And I mean, it's a great role for him. And like, he's a proper, like, every time he speaks, there's like menace in his voice. you can just sort of tell this is a bad, bad man. Like, there's no airs or graces or he's not pretending. This is just a bad man. He's another, I know I said earlier that Roy Petty's the only pure bastard in the show.
He is.
This guy's a pure bastard. And his wife, bastard.
Pure bitch.
I think it's going to come out in season two that maybe she's got psychological problems.
Yeah.
That maybe she's a little bit bipolar or something, or she's got some sort of weird psychiatric issue. But she's crazy.
But that is one of their main scenes, obviously, taking the baby out, leaving it for Mason.
Yeah.
But let's move on from Mason and his wife, because that is pretty much the nutshell what they've gone through is the trafficking.
Well, see, they amp it up. There's the thing with Bobby Dean.
Yep.
Where they eject him with heroin and OD him and then fuck him in the water.
Yep.
Trying to get Marty to get the blame. Yeah, exactly. Then there's the scene with the baby. And then
the finale.
That's
brilliant, man. Again, I was upset actually because I like Del.
I thought there was good scope for what Del would become in the next season as well. But my God, Darlene didn't read the script. She, you know, when you say they got their head blown off.
He
got his head blown the fuck off.
Yep.
Again, another one of those. It's a real shocker. Because
it is. They've just done a deal. They've just done an amazing casino deal on the road, on the boat.
Yeah, and you're like, this is going to be interesting because now they're joining forces, like the local hick criminals and the Mexican cartel. And again, you're like, Jesus, Marty could talk his way out of anything. And then he says something about rednecks.
That's fucked.
And what did you say? And because the camera focuses on his face.
Yeah.
When he gets shot, and his head just sort of splits in two, basically.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my fucking. It's like when one gets hit by the. gets hit by the truck, like.
Yeah, you're right. There's so many shocking moments. You're just like, what the hell?
The three big deaths in the show are the guy getting thrown off the window. And again, Marty's just walking along. Camera's not focused on him. Splash. Then you've got the real estate guy and his mother. And the way the camera is, it's sort of looking more at him than at the mother. And she's in the back going, la, 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 la. And then
she's swearing at him and she gets smacked.
And then this, Del turns around, and really politely kind of calls them rednecks. And then his head gets exploded.
Fantastic television, honestly. Oh, just fantastic. That opens up the next season, doesn't it? Because the cartel now is going to be after them, wanting to know what's going on. They're going to get rid of Del. They're going to try and play it as if he just disappeared. Obviously, what else are they going to do? So they've agreed this deal and agreed it on the phone too with the main man. So we're going to find out what goes on, which is a nice way to go into season two. But obviously, there's other characters. There's Buddy, who isn't going to last very long. He's
a great character, though.
Yes, Harris.
He's one of the true heroes of the show.
He is. There's not a grey really yet. I reckon there will be. By the time they get to explaining a lot more of his backstory, but for now, he's protected the family.
Yeah.
And when he kills one of the henchmen of Del's henchmen, I thought that was such a good scene. And he just leaves him lying there in the window. what the fuck? Do you remember that?
He shoots him and then just and just fucks off.
I can't breathe. I'm going to sit at the back. And then Marty turns up. What the fuck is this? And
it's so good. Good. Even the things where he walks
around naked.
He's walking down with bare arse out. He's going down to sit on his dock. You're just like, that is a man who has lived his life, has no fucks left to give.
No.
He doesn't care that he's just that he sold his house and there's a family with young kids living in it.
Too funny.
I think what we'll see in the next season maybe is that there's a good bond there between Buddy and Marty's son.
Oh yes. I think it's a good little way to get into the son as well.
Yeah. So I think we'll see that develop in the next season as well. But Joan is a weird little kid.
I like him though. I like the way he's acting.
But so do I. I think he's a good kid. I just think he's maybe a little bit socially awkward.
Yes.
Maybe suffers a little bit from anxiety or something, and that's what they're going to try and develop over
Don't
the next...
Don't you think, though, Dave, when the mum tells... They're okay, they're normal before the mum tells them that they're involved in money laundering. As soon as they find out, they go extra weird. Obviously, he's then watching videos of drug cartels blowing people
yeah.
up. He's basically watching Narcos on Netflix, right? Pretty much, right? And then she starts, like, she's, like, not even ready for sex, and she knows she isn't, but she still goes and has it, the girl, the daughter. And
she's just really annoyed.
She just does some weird stuff, like,
yeah.
steals
she's
a boat.
She's the one character I didn't actually like.
No, I didn't think she was a good fit. No.
But, again, like, you know, maybe... There's this, again, like, they can develop her character
for
over
sure.
the next...
Yeah.
And because she's, like, it's very, obviously, look, I'm 35, Gags, you're in around the same age as me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're older than I am.
Yeah.
I'm the young
Thanks,
one
mate.
Of the...
Thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem. So it's very hard for us to relate to a 15-year-old girl.
No, it's tough.
You know, I mean, I know you've got two little girls of your own, but they're not age.
But it is so understandable that they go off the rails, you know? They go weird because of what their dad's doing. So that's the mother being a bit stupid, I thought.
Yeah, for sure. But I think, again, like, it does kind of show that there's an honesty with her as well, that she will tell you right up front what's going
yeah,
on, except if
enough.
You're Marty and she's cheating on you. But
their argument scene was brilliant.
Yeah. But the scene where they where actually one of the best scenes between Marty and Wendy is the aftermath of when they're having sex and he recreates what's on the video that he'd been watching.
And ruins it all.
And ruins the whole thing like a fucking jackass.
Yeah. Like, really.
But you can tell, like, it shows his face during that, and he's a guy whose head is all over the place. Like, he doesn't know where he's meant to be.
All about the psychology. All about it. His head is fucked up because all the pressure about him is 50 million, 50 million, 50 million. Mm. That is all that's on his mind. And he does it. He achieves it. By hook or by crook, he achieves it.
Yeah.
But he can't sort his personal life out.
Exactly. And I think, again, that's... There's not one of these characters that you would look at now after the first season and say, this is what's definitely going to happen in season two with them. There's scope for all of them to develop and grow and change. Like, I mentioned Breaking Bad earlier. If you remember with Breaking Bad in season one, Walter developed as he found the Heisenberg character.
Yeah,
as well.
Alter ego. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's kind of what we see a bit more with, like, Martin Bird and Marty Bird. There's a little bit of, there's almost two sides to him. There's like the good family guy who's a very attentive father who loves
his
wife.
Yeah.
Loves his kids and really wants, you know, to be a good guy.
Mm.
And then there's this other side of him. You know, and the first side, obviously, he's a good businessman, he's a very clever guy, and wants to do well. And then there's this other side of him where you kind of think he almost enjoys having the connection to the cartel. There's a little bit of him that enjoys
the power,
knowing that, yeah, exactly, you know, and having that kind of money going through his hands.
Powerful, don't you, when you've got
when he took over the strip club, he loved fucking that guy up.
Oh my god, it was a great scene in
the
jail.
You know what I mean? He loved doing that. And I think we'll see more of that from him in season two.
Did you see the frailty as well, though, in terms of he's having nightmares of committing suicide? He actually says to his wife he wants to at some point. The first episode, he goes into the woods to say he wants to pee, but he cries. Shows the frailty that I am in deep fucking shit. He's on the verge so many times, isn't he, of giving up?
Yeah, and he walks right to the cliff edge as well.
Yeah.
And you're just like, geez, this guy could step over here and we're done. That's a wrap.
We know he's not, but yeah, you do think this is your mindset, this is where you are. And I think the ending of the show is he's obviously had that same private investigator trying to send his family away, and I got them passports, and they go. And in the end, I thought she was going to go, but the kids convince her, don't they? That you made us adults as soon as you told us that we should have a say.
Well, that's it, exactly. And it's cool when they do come back. And like I say, it's going to be interesting to see what the family dynamic is going to be next season. I'm really, I, I know we're probably the best part of the year from season two, but I think it's going to be brilliant. I genuinely think people, if you get into this show, I think it is going to be one that you'll really, really enjoy. Yeah. And like myself and Gags, you'll be sitting here going, when the fuck is this second season going to be on? Because
I'm hoping it's sooner. They need to start doing it sooner.
And the other bad thing about Netflix is not only can they not change things mid-season like you could with a normal show, is that they stream it on the same day. So they streamed, I think it was July 21st, 22nd, around then. So you could theoretically sit down the next day and watch the whole season.
Yep.
And then you've got to wait literally an entire year. Whereas if it was week by week by week, at least it'd only be 42 weeks. You know, again, like 9.5 months. Literally wait a whole fucking year.
I like your thinking.
But it could be worse. You could be Game of Thrones fans. Enjoy that 18-month wait for your next season, fuckers.
Thanks, mate. That hurt. That really hurt. But like I said, one thing it did actually remind me of as well was Bloodline, but only because of the location. But this is far superior to Bloodline. Bloodline was the third season was an absolute waste of time.
Bloodline could have been very, very good.
Yes, and great characters, great actors, and then the third season they just threw it off a cliff. I thought.
Yeah.
Did you think the same?
I did, yeah, and unsurprisingly, it was then cancelled.
Well, no, they knew it was going to be the last season before, so they were trying to get it to a really good conclusion, but they didn't even do that. I don't think the writing team did a good job with the third season at all. They knew it was going to be the last one, so it was just dead weird. I thought it was, they built the tension of that show, because that was similar, tense, all the way up to season two really well, and then threw it away. What a waste. Yeah. So if you want something that's going to end well, like as in have a good, meaningful ending, don't watch Bloodline. Just don't waste your time. Just do not waste it. With this show, though, thank you, Dave, for coming on and doing this, but I think you could tell from the way we talked about it for nearly an hour now after the spoiler-free part, we didn't stop. We haven't touched it. I'm actually, telling you the truth, there's little bits and pieces that you could talk about. Like Dave said, you've got to watch every single, or hear every single dialogue, and there's loads of meanings in what they're saying and stuff, and we haven't even talked about characters like the Langmore kids. We haven't talked about their relationship and how they, you know, linked up with the daughter. All these things, there's so much. We haven't talked about the kid and the animals, nothing yet, you know, the son, but we'll save it for obviously the next season, because things will develop
exactly. And like you have to watch this show.
You have to.
If you don't have it, like at the moment, I know a lot of, you know, the procedural shows are coming back. So if you're a Grey's Anatomy fan or a whatever, that's all coming back because it's that time of year. But if you're looking for, if you've got a weekend where you've not got much on, sit down and binge watch this. And honest to God, you're not going to be disappointed. You're really going to, this, I don't know anyone that hasn't really enjoyed this show. I think the worst rating I've seen it given by anybody on any website or anything is a 7 out of 10. It's a really, really good show. And like me and Gags have said a number of times, it's really just the introduction. There's so much scope for this to go forward.
There's so many
characters.
I introduced this to Nin, I think 2 days ago. She was just looking for a show. I said, oh, go and watch Ozark, you'll love it. She doesn't normally watch something dark like this, but I think in 2 days, she's 6 episodes in. She's just, it's just, you don't put it down. Once it grips you, like we said at the start, you just do not stop watching it, and it's done. And that's the problem with Netflix, like Dave said, then it's gone, and you're like, gotta wait. We've waited for Stranger Things for so long, you know, nearly a year and a half of Stranger Things as well.
Yeah.
Like you said, Dave, so that is one problem, but what they're doing is they're trying to create every month or every week what their long game will be. Every week we're producing something that we've got 50 shows that are amazing.
Yeah.
And over the year, there'll be one a week for you.
One a week.
And that will be what you want. And that will be then when it's bearable because you've got.
And at that point, you just cancel your TV service. You just have Netflix.
Yeah. Or
and
Amazon.
And Amazon. And
there's good stuff on Amazon, right?
Of course.
Between the two of them.
But that's it. That's the thing. Between the two of them, and maybe Hulu gets their act together and gets some more decent shows.
Handmaid's Tale was good.
You don't. That's it. I mean, you don't need to have to be spending £120 a month on Sky.
He knows. You spend
a tenner on Amazon, a tenner on this and a tenner on Hulu. There's 30 quid a month. I've just saved you 90 quid a month. So what you need to do is then take that 90 quid and fucking go and buy yourself something nice. Make yourself happy.
And seriously, if you've got one of the
Send me a tenner. Ollie, send me a tenner.
And if you've got one of the new smart TVs, which have these apps built in, and you don't even need a HDMI cable or nothing, plug it on. And Netflix now does in Ultra HD and all these. You know, everything's just amazingly done within a TV without actually having anything to plug into it. So in the future,
It looks cleaner on your wall as well.
Oh.
You don't have any wires running out.
Exactly.
It makes your house look nicer. It makes your life easier because you're not stressing about, you know, bills or any of that bullshit. Like, just takes all that away from you.
It's mad, isn't it, Dave? If you think about it, from where we are to where we were, say, 15 years ago. How crazy.
Even 5 years ago, do you know? And, I mean, you think now, where is this going to go next? Like, 5 years from now, where are we going to be with this? Like, and it is, it's very, very exciting. Like, they've come on leaps and bounds, and as things like Netflix, I mean, Netflix has been around a long time, even in its current format, forgetting about the DVD rental blood that used to be.
Mm.
But, I mean, Netflix have come on in leaps and bounds. The start of it was Orange is the New Black and House of Cards. When they did those two, and then, you know, they've set the tone for them and they've really come on. Amazon have copied what Netflix have done. Hulu have copied what Netflix have done. And like even Sky, to the point of, you know, Sky On Demand, Sky Box Office, that's just a blatant ripoff of Netflix. And that's why they were losing so much custom to Netflix.
Yep.
If they had sense, they'd just set up a deal with Netflix, you know? If they had any common sense, that's what they do. Because the new Sky Q Box has that kind of capability for its next model.
It is very good, mate. Very good.
It does have that capability to install apps. Because the current Sky Q Box actually does have apps on it, but they're Sky apps, they're specific Sky apps. So it does have the capability to install, like, not for you personally to do it, but for Sky themselves, to install third-party apps. So they could install Netflix on it if they were to strike a deal with Netflix. So, like, I mean, and don't rule that out, because while people love to bash Sky, they are very forward-thinking. They are very innovative. I mean, trust me, you can sit at home and complain about your Sky box not working all you want. Come to fucking Canada and try and use one of these Rogers boxes. They're fucking horrendous. Remember the big square blocky Sky box from about 2007 or so?
Yeah.
That's basically what the current Rogers box is. The remote control has about 85 buttons. Most of them do nothing. It doesn't work properly. It's so slow to react. This is how bad it is. Our Rogers box, the first remote we got, is sitting on a building site that's about 50 meters from my balcony.
You threw it out the window.
Walked out the balcony one day and fucked it over onto the building site.
Oh my God.
Because it just wouldn't work. It was the box is lucky it didn't follow. If it wasn't the fact that I don't own the box, I'd actually have to return it when I leave this godforsaken place. The box would have gone as well. I had to go and buy a new remote then.
I have to say, Sky Q is pretty amazing.
It is. And I know they've worked most of the kinks out. Once they work the rest of the kinks out of it, it's different. Like, it's streets ahead of what anyone else is offering.
Yeah, for sure. I really like it. They cater it to you as well. There's for you and stuff like that. I mean, that's the only way they can counter smart TVs, you know, and these apps, because they have to make it a better way of doing stuff. So, but Dave, you know what? Absolutely brilliant insight on Sky as well there. But it was really good to talk to you finally on the box again and on such a great show.
People that don't know, remember that show? What was it called?
The Night of.
So, for those that don't know, Mr. Tandon approached me and asked if I'd like to be on the podcast. I said, of course, Gags. You set up the time and date, just let me know.
Yeah, we messed up the dates a few times.
Not a fucking message did I get. Not a word did I hear. And all of a sudden, there's tweets going around. Oh, on the box, we did the night of. And I'm like, who the fuck is this?
No, we couldn't set a date and time. We've cancelled a few times.
You never hear not a word about it. Not a word that I hear.
Shut up.
Not a word that I hear. I can go. I listen. I have every message you've ever sent me. In case you ever say something incriminating that I can blackmail you with.
Now I know what you're doing, Dave. But no,
what we'll do is
we've got a few. There's a few other shows I think that are out that we can cover as well. So. I like the one that what we've done at the end of this, the state of TV. I think there's something we could cover in terms of that for On the Box as well.
And, for sure, I even think you could do like a one-off special podcast just talking about the state of TV at the moment and, you know, the developments of TV over the last 25 years, really, since Sky. And Sky were innovators in what they were doing, you know.
For
and
sure.
If you look, like, you go to Australia and you look at Foxtel, it's Sky. It's just Sky.
Well, Sky have actually outsourced it. I mean, in India, there's Sky Digital there as well. It's just it's just a simpler version that they've put there and stuff that they can do via text messaging. So they can actually get channels via text and it's just switched on really easy here. They're trying to make money out of the call centers and all the, you know.
Of course.
But over there, it's just a simple, you know what, send us a text and we'll charge you your bill through your phone and it's just all done. That way, really simple way of getting a channel on in India. But again, it's the same box. It's the same remote. It's all Sky. It's just outsourced over there. So I reckon they're making money in different countries, in loads of countries, from what they've done with technology.
They're making silly money.
Yeah.
They're making silly money.
But what we could talk about, actually, is football on TV, Dave. Let's do that. In terms of BT, Sky, and all that and where it's going to go. I think that would be a great show for On the Box and go all the way back to football coverage when we were kids. Not only that, sports shows, stuff like Match of the Day, not only that's a question of sport, let's go and cover all the stuff that we watched as kids and how it's evolved.
Question of sport and they think it's all over.
Wow.
Two of the great shows.
What about Badil and Skinner?
Oh, that was brilliant. That was genius.
Stato, remember that?
Yeah. That was your hero growing up, guys.
Of course he was. So I think what we'll do...
I could see Dan Rhodes as playing the role of Stato.
Yeah, we know what we'll do.
Because Rhodesy's got like that real kind of like quiet, calm personality.
Yeah.
Like, and he's kind of... Rhodesy's quite understated. He doesn't really lose the rag too often.
No, no.
He's very, really good. Very calm
what we'll player. Do is... What we'll do... we'll definitely set up that one to talk about the evolving sports shows on TV. And we'll get that done in the next few weeks if Dave's free. But Dave, fantastic, mate. Really enjoyed that. Thank you.
No problem at all, Gags. Always a pleasure.
Okay, guys, we'll be back with another On the Box very, very soon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.